Imagine a world where gasoline is nearly free, yet even that is a hardship. In a moment, we're going to talk to our guy in Venezuela. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Crude oil is cheap because the global economy doesn't need more of it. Crude oil is cheap because the U.S. figured out a way to pump a lot of it domestically, but it's mainly cheap because oil producers in the Middle East and beyond keep pumping lots of it in a bid to increase market share. Well, this week, the news had been that oil giants Saudi Arabia and Russia were trying to get everyone on board the idea of freezing production at last month's levels in a bid to firm up prices. But then Iran did not sign on, and then today Iraq suggested it would not curb its production for now. Players in oil markets are still betting that less pumping will win out, and the oil price in New York was up. But oil in the $30 range can be a kind of economic stimulus in consuming countries. More on that in a moment. But there's news from Venezuela of something that had been unthinkable. The government there is just slightly raising the retail price of gasoline at a time of desperation for that cash-strapped country where the economy is built on fossil fuel. Marketplace's sustainability desk reporter Scott Tong is in Caracas. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, David.
So we get the news last night that the president of Venezuela has raised gasoline prices there in a petrostate like Venezuela. This gas price stuff has been an untouchable third rail kind of thing?
Yeah. Here in Venezuela, it's the cheapest gas in the world. We just filled up for a regular size car for about four bolivars, which is about 67 cents on the official rate. Or less than half a cent on the black market rate, but that's a whole different story. I mean, that kind of gives you an idea what the price is before it goes up on Friday. So down here, it's kind of an economic funhouse of money distortions. You know, I'm still trying to unwind, but after a couple of days, you start seeing the crisis the country is in. You know, Venezuela is in a budget emergency. The government overspends on subsidies for gas, price controls on milk, toilet paper, electricity. That was all possible when the price of oil was $100. Now it's gone bust, of course. It's in the 30s. And the government now has to pay off its lenders. It says it will. So it's now touched the third rail of politics here and raised the price of gasoline, which, of course, is still crazy cheap.
So gas goes from free to kind of free. Yet I'm seeing here that Venezuela has so many shortages of so many other things. How does that play out in these desperately poor neighborhoods, the barrios there?
So you can drive, but you can't get anything else. You can't get consumer goods. My fixer I've hired down here has asked me to bring diapers from America for his new baby. I mean, the shelves are empty because everything in Venezuela is imported. And to import, you need to have dollars, but they're not selling enough oil at these low prices to get enough dollars. So in the barrios, in the slums, they do whatever they can, right? You line up on your allotted day, depends on what your ID card number is, or you swap, say, milk for acetaminophen on Facebook, as they do here, or you find alternatives like cooking plantains and diluting them as a milk substitute, or you find stuff on the black market for, say, 20 times the price, which pushes up inflation, and that's another part of the desperation here.
Marketplace's Scott Tong in Caracas will be hearing more of your reporting in the coming days. Scott, thank you.
You're welcome.
Guardians of U.S. interest rates at the Federal Reserve watch inflation closely. The rest of us feel it. With new data on the way this week about inflation at the consumer level, let's get some context today from Diane Swank at DS Economics. Diane, it's great to be reconnected.
Good to be here.
You know, every time I go on the air knowing that we're going to have consumer price index tomorrow and say there's not much inflation, it sticks in my craw because I don't know. It doesn't feel like there's no inflation.
Well, that's the real issue, is that although we know that prices have fallen at the pump, where are we spending money and how is it hurting? And one of the places it's hurting most is in medical costs. We know that premiums went up, so did copayments, so did deductibles. All that increased spending that we have to do takes away from spending elsewhere in the economy. And this is something that feels like inflation, but ironically, because it makes us make really tough choices, it actually could slow inflation in that sector.
But luckily, if we don't work in the oil services industry or the oil industry, the price of gas is down. And for a long time, we kept looking for what are people doing with the extra money this frees up? Are we finally spending it?
You know, we are. In 2015, we spent at the fastest pace in 15 years on food services and accommodations, from restaurants to travel to trips. That is really discretionary spending coming right out of that dividend that we're getting at the pump. And I think that's really important. People are also even doing more drive vacations more often now because they can afford to in that one area.
Veteran economist Diane Swank has a new firm. It's called DS Economics. You can guess what the DS stands for. Diane, thank you.
Thank you.
Walmart stores reported profits are lower and cut its sales forecast today. Last month, Walmart said it's closing 154 stores in the U.S. and more than 100 elsewhere. The stock was down in early trading today after the quarterly results came out. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more on a changing landscape for what is America's largest private employer.
Walmart is a retail giant trying to charge into the future, some say with old-school stores and strategies.
They are not the innovators anymore.
Charles Fishman is author of The Walmart Effect.
They created the retail ecosystem. Now the retail world is sort of changing out from under them.
Mark Cohen at Columbia University points to e-commerce as an example.
They're very proud of Walmart.com, which is enormous and has been growing 20 to 30% a year. But at the end of the day, they're still a tremendous also-ran in contrast with Amazon,
which also has low prices and no stores to pay for. Walmart's raising worker pay this year, which might eventually boost retention and morale, says Fisher. But there's another problem.
Half of Walmart's customers are the average American.
And lately, average Americans have had a hard time affording even the discounted stuff at Walmart. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Modern Europe has developed a rich tradition of make-or-break summits in recent years. But a gathering of European Union leaders in Brussels today really could be a turning point. British Prime Minister David Cameron is meeting with other European Union leaders to address Britain's relationship with its EU partners. And if the Brits don't get what they want, the country might pull out of the Union, which would be dramatic if not cataclysmic. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
At every major European summit, they play the European anthem, Beethoven's Ode to Joy. But that title could not be more out of tune with the EU today. The miseries are legion, from the festering debt crisis to the refugee fiasco. And now, warns the Polish head of the European Council, Donald Tusk, there's the danger of disintegration.
The risk of breakup is real, because this process is indeed very fragile. Handle with care. What is broken cannot be mended.
The deal emerging from the summit will be put to a British referendum on EU membership, most likely in June. If the Brits vote out, says Professor Richard Whitman of the Chatham House think tank, it could just lead to the whole bloc falling apart.
You know, this is one country leaving. Would other countries then seek to leave? Would they all seek special treatment for their own national interests and peculiarities? So, you know, could be catastrophic. Could well be the start of an unravelling.
The omens are, well, ominous. Only one country or territory has ever left the European bloc before. The vast, thinly populated Arctic island of Greenland sailed away from the EU's predecessor group, the EEC, in 1985. And even that, says Roger Vickerman, professor of economics at Kent University, was hardly a smooth and seamless affair.
The disentangling of Greenland's economy from the rest of the EU took a substantial amount of time. And Greenland is tiny in economic terms and population terms compared with the UK.
Some Europeans say the EU might be better off without the endlessly carping Brits. But others say if the world's fifth biggest economy does pull out, it'll be a disaster. We may well find out who's right if today's summit goes badly. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.